Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today we'll discuss the article by Malero Rafferty et al. Titled, Catalase Overexpression Prevents Mechanical Changes in Abdominal Aortic Aneurysm Formation. This article published online ahead of print, May 6, 2011. My guests today are Associate Editor Ivor Benjamin, Senior author Bob Taylor, and leading expert Neil Weintraub. Let's get started.
Thank you very much, Kara. Well, I think this is a really exciting and important clinical area. This the whole subject of abdominal aortic aneurysms, which over the past three decades have actually had an increase in the prevalence. This is a particularly lethal disease at the time of presentation, anywhere from 80 to 90% of patients actually will succumb. So getting a better understanding of AAA, which I will use just as an abbreviation for abdominal aortic aneurysm, is not only important, but I also think that there are tremendous scientific questions that need to be addressed. And I think that this article from Dr. Taylor's group handsomely demonstrates some of the critical features. Bob?
Our overall interest was really to try to look at some of the earliest biomechanical events in AAA formation. There's been a lot of emphasis on later events and those things leading to rupture, and we were trying to identify some of these early keys or cues for aneurysm formation. When we then took it to an animal model of AAA by using Ang2 in the APOE background with the catalase overexpressors versus wild type, what we were really surprised is to find that there really weren't big differences in stiffness and vascular stiffnesses, but what we saw were changes in opening angles as we measure those in the vessel wall and in isolated rings. And this is really an index of residual stress in the vessel. And normally with Ang2 infusion in this APOE model, the vessel has an opening angle such that when you cut the vessel, it inverts it, so it pops open greater than 180 degrees. And in fact, that response went away in the catalase overexpressors. And very surprising to us, it wasn't related to any differences in collagen or adventitial thickness, which would have been our first thoughts about that. There were differences in elastin fragmentation. And from this, these are not exactly the data we anticipated to obtain from these studies. But we think one explanation is that there's some profound stress heterogeneity across the vessel wall, and that maybe differences between the media and the adventitia and the balance of that stress across that wall is what's being altered. And I think this gives us some insights then to therapeutically not only what you could target in terms of mechanism, but also maybe spatially where we need to think about it. And we need to think probably more about the adventitia and this potential imbalance that can occur across the vessel wall.
Well, thank you, Bob. Neil, from your perspective, this has obviously been an area that you've been interested in quite a while. What were some of the highlights of this manuscript that really jumped out at you?
Well, Ivor and Bob, I thought this was a very interesting manuscript. Oxidative stress may predispose to aneurysm formation. So in other words, the normal aging process is associated with vascular oxidative stress, and that may be sufficient in part to help promote the milieu for aneurysms. And then if you think about what may happen with disease states, a second hit such as smoking or hypertension could accentuate that and predispose to aneurysms. The second part that I found very interesting here was the connection between the oxidative stress and the biomechanical changes that were detected in the aortic wall, which I found very interesting but somewhat difficult to understand without an engineering background. But what was really interesting to me was that the biomechanical factors seem to be quite readily measurable and yet not necessarily correlating with specific histological findings. And what this made me think of is we really don't have such good histological data as we think in terms of measuring changes that are relevant to formation of aneurysms, dilatation, and perhaps even rupture risk in patients with aneurysms and in animal models as well. So those are some of the highlights from my end.
How do you think are the biomechanical stresses and strains are recapitulated in a rodent model?
Well, I think there are some differences. There are some clear differences. One, in terms of sort of the solid mechanics, is we know that the mouse aorta is much more compliant than the human aorta. And so there are some differences there. And two, is the other part you alluded to, is that we have relatively long legs relative to our torso. Mice and most other non-humans have relatively small legs, or most experimental animals, mice, rabbits, pigs even. And so the contribution of the lower extremity vasculature may have some real impact on the fluid mechanics. And I think the one clue we have that this is true, that there are some differences between mouse and man in this setting, is the location. And in, as we know, in humans, the most common location for abdominal aortic aneurysm is infrarenal, whereas in the mouse, it's suprarenal. And the reason for that difference is it's not entirely clear. One possibility is related to fluid mechanics, not solid mechanics, but it also could be the solid mechanics. And it's just, you know, once you start getting small like this, it's actually hard to dissect things out too closely between super and infrarenal. The animal models for AAA has always been a challenge. I don't think there's a perfect model out there by any stretch, and there really aren't any good large animal models. And the small animal models are either usually a toxic substance or elastase or Ang-2, and they're never, you know, we're never quite sure they recapitulate exactly what you see in humans. And I do think that's a limitation, probably for all aneurysm studies that are not done in humans. And that's why it's important, like some of the work Neil has done, is to, you know, look back in human samples and always try to ground ourselves in the human disease, because particularly the biomechanics are likely different.
So perhaps I can just ask about low levels of reactive oxygen species, what might be the signaling targets, and perhaps how are those targets presumably disrupted or dysregulated to basically drive the pathogenesis of AAA?
We know that in terms of aneurysm disease, significant oxidative stress triggers apoptosis of smooth muscle cells, activates matrix metalloproteinases, upregulates inflammatory cell recruitment, increasing adhesion molecule expression, etc. So I think excessive oxidative stress, it's pretty clear how and why that could be an important factor. But you're absolutely right. We know that low levels of oxidants are also physiological regulators of cell signaling. For example, with smooth muscle cells, if you reduce oxidants below a certain level, the cells may also die. So there appears to be a range that we've evolved to exist within an ideal level of oxidant stress. And that range is difficult to measure in vivo. It's difficult to modulate in terms of a lot of the tools we have to regulate oxidative stress. And then furthermore, it's a complicated by the fact that the oxidants interact with each other. So we often don't even know which particular oxidant may be harmful and which may be beneficial at any given level. So that's what makes this field so challenging.
In the final couple of minutes that we have, Bob, I wonder if you can just take a stab at how these findings can be of potential translational value.
One of the, I guess, obvious things is for us to take this current study to the next step, and is to really look at aneurysm formation in the genetic models, where we specifically regulate catalase, smooth muscle versus macrophage versus endothelium. That's one of our areas of interest and where we're headed. Another area that we're very interested in is local delivery of antioxidants to the vessel wall in that specific area where presumably there is an excess of reactive oxygen species.
Bob, let me sort of leave this with you, and perhaps you can just leave us with a couple of kernels that this important work will actually have from a public health standpoint.
These data can be appropriately interpreted to mean that very modest changes in reactive oxygen species at an early stage can have profound changes and profound impact on the vessel wall in terms of the local biomechanics. It really indicates a mechanism whereby these multiple risk factors converge, whether it be smoking, inactivity, hypertension, diabetes, where those things can interact at this common level at a very early stage to induce the mechanical changes. And it may be one of the mechanisms whereby the very important risk factor of cigarette smoking can have some profound effects that show up, you know, decades later in these patients.
Well, Bob and Neil, let me thank you both, as well as, of course, Kara, for this exciting podcast, and look forward to another exciting round of papers. Thank you very much.
And to our readers, thanks for listening to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast series.